Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. I don't know if we'd call this a mini pod, but it certainly will be shorter than some of the other pods that I have done. But I have veterans of the mini pod game on this one. So let's call it a roundtable, a short roundtable with Sports Business Journal Managing Editor / Digital Austin Karp and John Lewis, the editor and founder of Sports Media Watch. Austin and John, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Grizzled veterans by this point.
I know.
Grizzled.
All right. It's not the Marchand and Karp report yet, is it? Or is that still to be determined?
It is not. I'm an observer.
Okay. So let's start with Peacock in terms of our discussion point. I can't believe you'd be listening to this podcast and sort of not know this, but for maybe the one or two of you who don't, Peacock paid $110 million to the NFL for the exclusive rights to stream a playoff game. And so Peacock ended up with the Chiefs and the Dolphins. And while that game was pretty mundane, if you were a neutral, the numbers for the game for Peacock were really, really strong. They averaged 23 million viewers, at least according to Nielsen Fast Nationals. That number beats the lowest watched wild card game last year in terms of linear. It tops the Cowboys-Seahawks Amazon game for the most streamed NFL game of all time. And then finally, as I'll turn over to you, John Lewis, what we don't know, of course, is how many people bought it versus how many people watched who already had Peacock. How many of those people who actually bought it will churn out after a month. But while I don't particularly like it, while I think it's obviously a money grab, I think if you're going to be sort of objective and look at it as a business proposition, I think this was a very, very successful day for Peacock in the NFL. How did you see it?
I would agree with that. I think, you know, the measure of success here is different than it would normally be for the NFL because, yes, viewership was up from last year, but last year's game set a pretty low bar. It was the Chargers-Jaguars game, not really that interesting, even with the big comeback. And the reality is that it's still one of the lesser watched wild card games in the past 20 years. I mean, you know, bottom 20, which is not that bad, but still. But of course, the NFL knew going in that it was going to be sacrificing audience to do this and to be able to get 23 million viewers anyway. I mean, I thought it could be in the teens. So to get 23 million viewers is an incredible feat for the NFL. It's great for Peacock. Not great for the 10 or so million viewers who would probably have been tuning in otherwise and had to miss the game. But ultimately for the NFL and for NBC, an unqualified success.
Austin, big picture for you on this?
I think it is a win. I think they set themselves up for success and they achieved that. Like you said, 23 million Nielsen plus Adobe Analytics plus whatever magic it was thrown in to create that number these days. And that's everybody. It's not just in this particular one. But it sets them up to sell it for even more money next time because it's part of the NFL media deal. they get to sell one wild card a game a season. And that's not, it's going to go for way more than $110 million next time. They cherry picked a very popular game in it, regardless of what the score was. Once people signed up, they were probably going to stick around whatever the score was because they already paid for Peacock for the month. Now, the question is, you know, for Peacock, can they retain viewers, especially big, you know, casual sports fans, between this game and the Paris Olympics? They got the Premier League. They have, you know, male skewing things like Oppenheimer coming, which they advertise a lot during the game. So what's the churn rate going to be? I think that's particularly important to pay attention to for all streaming platforms, just to see what this sort of big audience game was able to deliver in terms of subscribers that stayed with the platform.
So that's a great question. Listen, we've all written about this. I wrote a long story on the Peacock game, then a short newser after the game. And in talking to Rick Cordello, who's the president of NBC Sports, John, he had said that like his first goal was to make the production a quality production. Second goal was obviously to make sure that the tech worked and that there weren't like mass outages. And then after that, they got into like the idea of metrics and how many people bought, how many people would stick around. What would be interesting, and I don't know if we'll ever get this number, right, is like how many new subscriptions did they get from this? The churn is, as Austin mentioned, is something separate, but that's the one I'd love to know is like, because if it's like they got 8 million new subscribers, I'm just making this up, right, or 5 million new subscribers, well, some of those people are going to stay with Peacock after this month. If it turns out it's like 1 million or a small number, well, then they paid a lot of money, I think, for the most part, just for marketing and nothing else. Do you agree with sort of that thinking? And in some ways, some of the success sort of really depends on how many new subscriptions they got. And I don't know when and if we'll get that number.
I mean, that's a question that Brian Roberts is going to get, right, during Comcast's next earnings call. Like, all right, like, what's Peacock at? And then the first question from an analyst is going to be related to this moment. Like, what'd you get? How many people left? And a really interesting statistic I saw, I think it was from somebody, I think Parrot Analytics, about like during the Olympics last time, the number of people that signed up just during that Olympic period and then left, the rate was much higher than what it normally is, you know, based on signing up for a sporting event. So yeah, I am interested to see that.
John?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as Austin said, Comcast will know. And I do think we'll see at least, you know, an elevated number the next time there's an earnings report. I don't think it'll still be 28 million. The reality is that is the measure of success in my view. I mean, what's the point of spending $110 million on a single NFL game unless you're going to get, a significant bump in subscriptions out of it? The reality is they could have paid that same amount of money for all of the NCAA's non-men's basketball championships, which, you know, over the long term, you know, gives you programming throughout the year. So if you're going to spend that kind of money on one game, you'd better get something to show for it afterward.
Yeah, by the way, I mentioned that Hillary Mandel and Karen Brockin were my guests prior to you two. So if you're interested in that NCAA deal with ESPN, check that out. They were excellent. Just for a point of order, Peacock says it has 30 million subscribers, John, as of now. Subscriptions up 75% over the last year, a big number, and this is just crazy to think about. The platform was at 2.8 billion in losses in 2023. So Comcast is obviously hoping that that's peak losses, but man, Austin, you know, your publication obviously covers this about as good as anything. I mean, this isn't me being Warren Buffett. That's not sustainable. So the question is, like, looking long term, can they get it to the point where they can make money, which, you know, it feels like they'd have to get double those subscribers, or, and I think this is inevitable, and, it, you know, smarter people than me have said this, it just looks like we're eventually going to be looking to a consolidation era where, you know, either a Peacock sort of combines with another streamer, or there's some kind of setup where, like the cable bundle, you can buy all of these, basically. And then I'm making this up, but, like, you know, 150 million people have the quote-unquote streaming bundle.
I think it's a combination of what you just talked about. I think it is a rebundling, and it's definitely going to be, you know, a merger of some of these platforms, because you don't need that many. You just don't. And the way that the economics of some of these companies are already set up, yeah, you could see a future where it's Max and Paramount, or it's Peacock and Paramount, you know, some sort of permutation of a merger there. It's going to be both, though. But we're not going to see fewer games on streaming services. We're going to see more and more big time games. And I'm sure this was the conversation that was being had 25, 30 years ago when games first started going to cable. Like, oh my God, I can't believe a big game is, or a package is going to ESPN. Like, this is the future. I mean, there will be more and more big time events that are streaming platform only.
So let me get to you, John Lewis, because this is interesting. You know, the I agree with Austin. Obviously, I do think we're going to get more big games on streaming. But the real question is, what is this going to mean for the NFL? A 1,000% agree with Austin, as I wrote this week. There is no way that the NFL is not going to repeat this next year. Like, it's just, you're fooling yourself if you don't think there's not going to be another streaming playoff exclusive game. I don't know if it'll be on Peacock. You know, maybe it will. Maybe it's on Amazon. But it's going to happen. They don't go backwards. There's no way that's not going to happen. The real question for me, John, is how much does the NFL ultimately do this? Because that's where you do get into a little bit of a interesting discussion regarding how much the public will accept it. Because the NFL is really the one sport where the public almost demands availability. I haven't even mentioned Congress. Let's forget about just, you know, some congressmen just going out there for some social media kind of run. You know, the NFL puts too much stuff behind a paywall. I do wonder if Congress starts to think about it. So that to me is like the interesting calculation. You know, the NFL talks about reach. They talk about that they want all their games available. Yes, they're all available in these local markets. But at the same time, they know that there's this big revenue source sitting out there. So let's just play it out. Like, we'll game it out a little bit. 3 years from now, John Lewis, how many postseason games you think are behind a streaming paywall?
Well, two at the most. You have to keep in mind, you have these six wild card games. There's one for each of the major networks. And then NBC and CBS have a number of contractually mandated years where they have two games. I have no idea if Fox has any two game years as well, but NBC and CBS do. So, you know, that might be an artifact of when they first started the six game wild card weekend. NBC and CBS won the two extra games in that year. But basically, most years down the line, there'll only be one game available to sell to a streaming service. I think you'll see, as you said, Amazon's got to get one. If you're Amazon, you have to be wondering why we didn't get this one to begin with, that aired on Peacock. So Amazon probably gets it next year because there'll only be one game available. Because CBS has two wild card games, and you know, maybe you'll see Amazon and Peacock sometimes. You know, maybe Amazon and Paramount Plus, maybe ESPN Plus gets one. You know, I definitely think that extra wild card game every year will probably cycle through a number of streaming services. But you'll still see, at worst, four games on linear, and in most years, five.
Yeah, I agree with John. I only think it's going to be one because of the contractual obligations, at least during, you know, this media deal, unless there's some sort of renegotiation. But ESPN Plus is an interesting one, especially in the light of the talks that the NFL is having with ESPN and Disney. Like, what does that broader deal in NFL media look like? What does the investment by the NFL into ESPN look like? Is that, you know, giving them that ESPN Plus wildcard game every season? Is a broader regular season package. So I think there's a lot of unknowns on that deal as well.
Yeah. And obviously we've already entered a world where the NFL is on a streaming platform. Amazon has those games every Thursday. So you guys have good insight. Definitely next year we'll get at least one. I'll be curious. I don't think I'll eat these words. I don't think during the course of our, well, I shouldn't say you guys, during the course of my writing career on this stuff, by the way, which could end tomorrow, who the hell knows, we're not going to see like a Super Bowl or anything like that, like a pay-per-view style thing like that. The NFL is not going to do that. But I do think, to Austin's excellent point, there are going to be some things that go behind a streamer that we have traditionally been used to on linear television and other sports. That stuff is coming. And then pay attention, obviously, to the NBA deal. where there absolutely will be a streaming service part of that, and there will be games, I think postseason games, quite frankly, that go behind that. Austin brought up, or one of you guys brought up the news that Andrew Marchand of the Post first broke about the NFL getting some kind of equity stake in ESPN. Seems like, you know, based on, you know, reporting that I did and that others did, you know, we're still a little bit of a ways possibly behind this actually coming to fruition, but it's very, very clear that, like, talks have been underway. Bob Iger said that that the company Disney is looking for people to buy an equity stake in ESPN. If it turns out to be the NFL, obviously that opens up a lot of questions and a lot of opportunity. So let me go to you, Austin. If this does eventually sort of happen, and the NFL Network and Red Zone sort of become part of the Disney family, how I see it is just that, like, I think they would still have this sort of in a separate silo, like, within the whole universe, versus, like, the notion that somehow, like, the NFL Network and ESPN's NFL coverage would morph together, right? Don't you? It feels like it would be something like
Like the Big 12 on ESPN Plus, like a separate
family. So, or yeah, the SEC Network, or like the Longhorn Network, or the way like maybe the Big 10 Network sort of has a relationship with Fox. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I see it. How do you, again, if it does it come to fruition, how do you see it?
It could go that way, but you start thinking about it. It's like, is ESPN then, if they buy this, are they then competing against themselves?
Yes.
The both networks carry the NFL draft. I mean, do you still want NFL game day morning going up against Sunday NFL countdown? There's just so much, there's competition year in and year out that NFL Network puts out in direct competition with what ESPN is doing on their programming and their shoulder programming and original documentary series.
Yeah, but they partner in their buddies when it comes to the NFL draft now. I feel like that competition is less about competition, don't you think, and more about collaboration in some ways?
It could be, and especially if you just think about it as, you know, just another simulcast and you have one audience, you're not competing, oh, here's what NFL Network did versus ESPN. It's just one audience anyways.
What about you, John? How do you, if this thing, we'll get to the journalism part in a second, but if this thing comes to fruition as a business play, you know, I mean, you can obviously understand why both entities want this. If you're ESPN or if you're Disney, I should say, because it's a corporate thing, you know, you're getting a lot more eyeballs into your universe from the NFL Network, from Red Zone, et cetera. And if you're the NFL, obviously, well, you got a stake in ESPN, which, you know, could theoretically provide you revenue. Also, this is the reality of this. They've been looking to unload NFL media forever. I think they just want to get out of the let's pay for sort of media game. So they would get some cost-cutting leverage there.
Yeah, but I also think it creates a lot of complications as well. I mean, once you're partnering with one of your, you know, partners, the other partners might have an issue with that, especially, let's say, the Monday Night Football schedule gets really good. I mean, it's already pretty good. If that supplants Sunday Night Football, how is NBC going to feel about that? The point Austin brought up about the competition, I don't think that's as big a problem because ESPN already competes with itself in so many ways. They've got, you know, they've got College Game Day on their main networks, but they've got their little SEC Nation. I know that's not much of an audience, but since the SEC Network isn't Nielsen rated, those viewers are being taken away from game day and they're not even being accounted for anywhere. So ESPN, you know, I don't think there'll be a problem having game day morning compete with Sunday countdown. But I do think that for the NFL, you know, you could potentially irritate the other partners who are paying, you know, collectively quite a bit of money for those rights.
Yeah, good point. All right, John, I want to stick with you on this. What do you think this means potentially for ESPN's journalism efforts when it comes to the NFL? All of us have been around long enough to remember playmakers and how ticked off the league was at ESPN's dramatic presentation of the NFL. I mean, I don't think ESPN called it the NFL, but I think we all knew it was. You know, the big one obviously was League of Denial when it came to that reporting by Mark Fenerwada and Steve Fenerew, and how PBS and ESPN, if I remember correctly, they agreed to collaborate on the project, and ESPN dropped out. I mean, that was an absolute mess when it came to ESPN's relationship with the NFL regarding ESPN's reporting on concussions. You know, Jimmy Pitaro came in and really, you know, exhibit A, B, C, and D, and goal A, B, C, and D was to sort of reestablish that relationship, which they obviously have done. Monday Night Football has become gotten a great schedule. ABC is now doing the games. My sort of big picture take here is that, like, there's the great reporters, obviously, to ESPN, unquestionably, and they'll still do reporting on the NFL. It wouldn't eliminate all of that. But I do think once you get that relationship that kind of close and you become an equity partner, I do think, like, you're basically telling the market that business is far more important than editorial. And the fact is, business can make you a lot more money than journalism. So it's not, it would not be a good day for journalism and ESPN, in my opinion, but I also am, I think, sober enough to realize that in many ways, that's really not what Disney is looking to do heading forward. They want to make money. How do you see it?
Well, I mean, I think the writing has been on the wall at ESPN for a long time, as far as that goes. You know, Outside the Lines barely exists. You know, ESPN is already in a position where they're not going to report anything negative about the NFL unless they absolutely have to. If there is real news, like important news, they will report negatively. They will, you know, use Don Van Natta, Seth Wickersham, who I assume are still working there. I mean, I think Don Van Natta is.
They just posted a really excellent story on the end of the Belichick run.
Right. And but, you know, the kind of stuff that you were talking about, playmakers, obviously was never going to happen again anyway. But, you know, something like League of Denial, there's no way ESPN would get involved in that. It'd be very interesting.
No chance. Not with great depth and cross multi-platform kind of heft. I agree with you. I just that those days I think are over. You know, you make a great point. Like, you know, one thing about ESPN PR is they sort of like they don't push back anymore on like where they used to when, you know, I'd write stuff about outside, they were gutting Outside the Lines and they'd say not true, where, you know, it's now a fancy Saturday program. Now it's just, you know, now it's a multi-platform project, but you're dead on that. Austin, how do you sort of see this and the fact that if ESPN does partner with the NFL or partners with the NBA or partners with the NHL, you know what, one of these leagues, I just think, you know, once you become formal partners, the editorial is different. In many ways, the editorial becomes about the transactions. They'll always write about the players. There's no issue there. They'll always write about the coaches, even getting a little bit into ownership. But I don't know.
It's the investigative journalism. Yeah. Well, where is that going
right.
to come from?
Yeah.
If it's not going to come from, you know, what many have considered the preeminent sports outlet of the last 30 years, ESPN, if you're not getting that level of investigative journalism anymore, yeah, like where's it going to come from in the sports world? It's a very fine
line.
It has to come from
the independent place. I mean, the reality of this, the sad reality of this, and I think the three of us know this, is that kind of stuff costs a lot of money, and it's hard to make the money on it. Do you know what I mean? The investment is for the public good. The investment is not necessarily for profit. And I think the sad reality is, like, I think ESPN has learned that, right? You can make a lot more money to do a, you know, sort of a debate-like show than you can doing Outside the Lines. That's just like, it sucks, but that's the reality of the marketplace. And they're a for-profit business. They're not the CBC. They're not the BBC.
No, those sort of pieces used to be the water cooler talk among sports fans. And now it's what custom jacket Taylor Swift was wearing during the Chiefs game.
Or it's more like, you know, I think it's more like what quarterback do you take, like, number one overall?
A lot of that too, yeah.
Or who's going to replace Belichick in New England? But that is, you know, to be fair to ESPN, that is not an ESPN thing. Like that is a... in many ways, an American society.
No, well, that's what fans want. In that case, those sorts of things, speculation on who's going where in the draft and who's going to be coaching who and hot stove this, hot stove that. Fans
CNN
want that.
Is going to do, right, CNN is going to do far more horse race stuff, right, Trump v. Biden, yeah, than they will any kind of like in-depth look at like our relationship with NATO. Do you know what I mean? Because like one is going to draw viewers and eyeballs and one's not. John, before we get off this topic, you want to add anything?
Well, you know, I do wonder how something like, say, Ray Rice would be covered and handled today, right? We're 10 years out from that. That seems like it's from a completely different era of
still
American
It's still a player. That's still a player story, though. So I think they would do that, don't you?
Well, it was a player story, but really it was a Goodell story. I mean, Goodell, people wanted him to resign. It became this huge thing where, you know, Goodell was public enemy number one. You know, you had people building their profile, asking him really tough questions. And to me, you know, I don't really know that something similar could happen today. I mean, you never know. But I think that all that stuff that happened from about 2014 to about 2018, the tail end, really from 2013 with the concussion movie to 2018, where people were really coming at the league and the owners and Goodell in a very sustained, very critical way, certainly hasn't happened in the 5 years since. And I don't see it happening again for a while.
You hear a lot less criticism of Goodell on the places that are aligned with the NFL in the last couple of years. Again, I'm not saying that people wouldn't criticize. I don't know if they'd criticize him on the NFL network. Let's just be honest. So I'm not saying it's just not the case 100%, but I am with you, John. It's reduced and Ray Rice's situation. That would be interesting to see how that would play in 2024 in terms of.
Where I think it's going to come, Richard, is I think, you know, we're going to have a big bad sports betting story. I don't know, in some league sometime in the future where it looks really bad on a league, and ESPN's going to have to report on it, and they're tied up with, and if it's, I don't want to, you know, you don't want to single out any league. It could happen in any league, but, you know, ESPN's very tied into all of these leagues, so.
Yeah, and they have their own betting platform. I think they will report on it, but we'll see. I think that'd be too big not to, but, you know, a lot of it also has to do with, like, how the reporting is, right, and what happens.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, two more quick topics here, and then we'll get out of here. Nick Saban, I didn't want to get you guys' take on this. Austin, it seems to me that if you can make these prop bets in Vegas, speaking of gambling, I would bet nearly – well, I'm not going to bet all my financial holdings on anything. But I would bet a lot of money that Nick Saban is an ESPN employee in the next couple of months. And then the real question would be whether Nick is interested in, like, doing the game day circuit and traveling versus Nick in a air-conditioned studio somewhere opining on football, or Nick doing one of, a big game of the week as an on-site game analyst. What's your thought about that? But I can't see Nick Saban not working for ESPN. It seems like a fait accompli.
Well, I think it's what you said. It's what Nick wants. If Nick wants to work game day, they'll figure it out. If he wants to just be a studio analyst, they'll figure it out. If he wants to call games on ESPN, they'll figure it out. But if Nick just wants to sit by his lake house and enjoy retirement, then that's what he'll do. He's in the driver's seat, but it makes a lot of sense on ESPN. He's done it before, and I think it would be a natural spot.
This is the silliest question of all time, okay? If Nick Saban wanted to host Around the Horn, would they get rid of Tony Reale and put Nick Saban in there? I want to know how much they want Nick Saban.
how much sway does he have? After Tony Reale, if you asked him, he'd be like, yeah, Nick Saban can have.
I don't think they would do that. I think they keep Reale. But like, it's sort of the joke is like, you know, how far, like they really want Nick, but I don't know, I'm just making this up. Like, what if Nick wants to call Monday Night Football? Like, would they kick Joe Buck out of there? No, there's probably limits to it, but I'm with you, Austin. I think basically...
Oh, he has a certain personality.
Yeah, yeah. You ask Nick what he wants
on certain platforms.
Yeah, yeah. You ask Nick what he wants.
But it's what he wants to do. Yeah. What does he want to do?
What do you want to do in college football, Nick? And ESPN will figure that out. John, I wanted to give you a shot at this. What's your take on Nick Saban?
Well, I mean, I think obviously, as has been said, whatever role he wants, he can have. Game day would obviously be, you know, the ideal for ESPN, but I don't know that his vibe works for game day.
I think it could, because I think there's nobody else like that on set. That's kind of why I think it worked. Yeah, McAfee, sort of Energizer Bunny going nuts. Reese Davis, you know, total professional host. Herb Street and Desmond Howard, sort of our infrastructure guys. They've been there a long time. You don't think like sort of a Saban would be an interesting counterpart to McAfee? They're very different, so I think that could work. That's my thought.
Well, you know, it could also be oil and water, right? And one thing
he's
I
also
think
on
is
McAfee.
That,
keep in mind, they have a relationship.
Oh. Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's on me for not watching enough Pat McAfee's show. But I would say ESPN has quietly put together a really good top level in studio team with Negandhi and Booger McFarland on ABC. And, you know, that's the old John Saunders role that he had for many, many years. That's their A1 studio. And with the SEC, that studio is going to have a higher profile. They're going to be doing better games on ABC in the middle of the day, where it'll be Negandhi and Booger McFarland in the studio. And maybe Nick Saban is a good fit for that, because that's going to be an SEC game every week.
I like that a lot. That's very smart. Well, look at that, Austin. That actually, John Lewis can be a programmer, because that really would, that's a good fit. That's already a good show. I think Booger's great. I'm a big Negandhi guy. I will say, just because of the high profile nature, I think at the Saban level, it's going to be Jimmy Pitaro and Burke Magnus kind of talking to him. You're dealing with that kind of talent. I would try to push him to game day. I just think you'd get so much mileage out of that. I think you could sell that as a marketing play, like Nick Saban coming to your campus. And you got to admit, with all the publicity that Fox Big Noon Kickoff has gotten, and with the fact that they've gotten some viewership pops, Austin, I think they would love to like counter that. You know, they own that thing forever. And now Fox has come up with, well, again, you know the numbers better than me. Fox isn't beating them, but at least they're in the conversation in terms of viewership. So
they're making strides.
Yeah. I think they would love to sort of send Saban out to all these different places, because I think that would give game day such a, it would give people, it would be college football curiosity seekers would want to hear what Nick had to say Saturday morning. That's my take.
No, absolutely. I think in the same way, people are going to want to listen to Tom Brady when he's calling his first games. There's definitely an intrigue factor on what he would say. But I think he's figuring out what he wants to do. And like you said, it's going to be at the highest levels of ESPN, talking to Sexton, talking to Saban on what he wants to do and what kind of role he wants to have, if he wants to do it.
Yep.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, final topic. We'll get out of here really quick on this. I'm curious about how you guys see sort of Pat McAfee and ESPN playing out in the near term over the next 6 months. Again, anybody who's listened to this podcast knows I say it because I'm laughing, but it's true. I historically align with talent battling Norby Williamson. I think that's been my MO. So I generally will align with anybody who sort of is not aligning with Norby. That said, you know, I think McAfee has a responsibility to call out some of Aaron Rodgers' non-football bullshit if he's sort of on his show, even though Pat has creative control and guest booking. I mean, it goes without saying Pat McAfee has not been canceled. You know, he's got Burke Magnus and Jimmy Pitaro supporting him, and he's going to be there. I've written a lot about McAfee. I actually like what he has done for his staff. I know he's an incredibly loyal guy, and he's built an empire there. That said, still working for ESPN. You're still working for a quote-unquote legacy outlet, even though you have more leverage if you're Pat McAfee, which he certainly does. You know, there are lines that all these places have. I would think things will calm down for a little bit, Austin, and, you know, we're not going to – I don't think anything's going to happen again, and if anything happens again until the fall, I think my sense is that things will calm down a little bit. But man, have I been wrong about ESPN before. So let me just ask you in the short term. You know, obviously it's kind of a silly question because McAfee's got a 4.5 years left or whatever on his contract. But over the next 6 to 8 months, you think the relationship is fine with McAfee, or do you think we can be getting into some crazy waters again?
I think they're going to I think cooler heads will prevail. I think they'll ride it out, let it calm down. We'll get out of football season. It won't be as pronounced because he's not going to be on the show. Rodgers not going to be on the show anyways. And it's just a natural let it get out of people's memories. And we'll see what it's like next football season. But that's a long time from now. And I think they'll just ride it out for now.
Yeah. What about you, John, as we get out of here on this?
I feel the same. I mean, you know, Pat owes it to himself more than anything to lay low a little bit and not have the show be making, you know, big headlines beyond just talking about the games. You know, ultimately, I think it's always good to have a big celebrity, a big, you know, a public figure like Aaron Rodgers on your show. But if you're in a position where you are constantly having to clean up stuff with him and deal with all of the, you know, the offended editorials and all of these things because he's on your show, you know, I mean, it's your show. I mean, it's the Pat McAfee show, not the Aaron Rodgers show. And really, more than anything, he owes it to himself to not have to deal with that. As far as ESPN goes going forward, you know, Pat's bigger than ESPN, same way Stephen A is, and he knows that. And it was very smart, risky, but smart of him to take on Norby because, I mean, I think the idea... Pat's built this thing himself, and the idea of having some network executive undermining him by leaking to the New York Post. I mean, it's pretty galling if you're
again,
someone like that.
Allegedly. We don't know who leaked.
Yes.
But yes.
Allegedly.
Those are the allegations. Yeah, the one thing you said there that that is dead on is Pat McAfee has the leverage here. And he certainly has leverage over Norby Williams, unquestionably. But he has leverage over ESPN because they license his show. And again, this is my interpretation, but I think John Austin agreed with me. McAfee would get in a nanosecond if he left ESPN another deal. So in many ways, the star system of ESPN in the 90s and 2000s has changed, where there are some people now at ESPN, you mentioned Stephen A, I agree with him as well, where the company... at least at the moment, needs them more than they need the company. And that's the calculation that all these guys have to sort of make is you know, Pataro and Magnus publicly, to me and others, have made a very, very big bet on McAfee. So they're in. And in many ways, like his success is related to their success because they paid all this money and they bet on him. So again, this, you know, I'm with Austin. I think things will chill out, particularly just because the football season's almost over. And then we'll see where that goes. Is there anything else that you guys would like to comment on? I don't know if you guys are interested, but the NCAA deal was fascinating to me that ESPN signed just because I would have loved to have seen the women's tournament go to market, even though I would have wanted ESPN to get it. But I am Austin optimistic. I know you're a fan of these sports too, that ESPN is going to throw some big marketing dollars and weight behind the women's college softballs and the women's softballs and the women's college basketballs. I think that's the best home for all those properties personally, even though I think ESPN got a pretty good money deal.
Yeah, I do think that it is the best place for them. It is essentially the home for college sports throughout the entire school year. You'll see more promotion. You're going to see more games on ABC, which is important. You've seen that in the last couple of years with championship games. But, I mean, heck, look, I mean, in the College World Series and, you know, in some of the women's March Madness games, some of the early round games are getting on ABC now. So I think that was a big win in the last couple of years. It's great exposure for the sports. Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what they do during the duration of this new deal.
All right, John Lewis, I'll give the final word to you. You can weigh in on this or you can weigh in on something else.
Well, I definitely think that the fact that all of those properties went for, you know, about the price of a single NFL playoff game, it gives you some pause about the market because it's not just the women's tournament in basketball that has value. I mean, yes, obviously that is by far the most valuable of those properties, but, you know, the Men's College World Series got a pretty nice audience last year. I mean, if I'm Fox, That would have been a nice fit, you know, with all the baseball they air. Women's College World Series does good numbers typically. And, you know, I mean, there's a few properties in there. I mean, even volleyball to an extent, even though it's not as big a draw as those other ones. We are in a different market. Certainly, I don't think you're getting, you know, I know it was only 40 or so million in the previous deal, but, you know, 100 odd million viewers, excuse me, 100 odd million in rights fees for this. It seems like the type of thing that makes you go, about the state of the market. Similar to the NASCAR deal where they wanted to sell a single 6-week package in the middle of the season, had to split it into 2 5-week packages to get the kind of money they wanted. Makes you wonder what the NBA's heading into coming up in the next couple of months.
Well, let me, as we close up here, let me give a shout out to John Lewis, whose site Sports Media Watch is always invaluable. But John, I really appreciate you posting some of the sports viewership numbers on sort of the daily sports viewership numbers that you do, because you know, we all of us have had different sites that have had that over the years. You know, our buddy Robert Seidman of Sports TV Ratings has done that. But now you have taken over the mantle of this publicly outside of those fancy people like Austin Karp who get the Nielsen access delivered.
I don't know what you're talking about,
delivered,
Richard.
Delivered to their house. So so this is really good, John. So I appreciate that. I'm not sure how you're getting those. You shouldn't tell anybody. But the fact that you're able to get, you know, the daily viewership numbers on ESPN or FS1 or what like a Liga MX game might do on a given night, I really appreciate that. That's interesting to me, and I think interesting to a lot more people than you might expect.
I'll echo that. Shout out to you, John. I'm doing the work.
Thanks for me on that, John. I appreciate you doing that, and I'll keep clicking.
There is one thing I wanted to talk about just here at the end. Like, who is making the programming decision to put the Emmys up against an NFL wildcard game? Like, wow.
Well,
that's a terrible decision.
Yeah, that's a great you know, if we were like the Ringer, we could do an hour on the Emmy broadcast. But I think their fundamental problem is that people are no longer interested in award shows the way they used to be. And I don't know how they can game change that. That's where COVID, I think, destroyed
start by
this,
not going up against the NFL, though. Like 4.6 million.
I know, but even so,
NFL
Austin,
Network game. Like, just stop it. Yeah.
The theater experience, well, I guess this is the Emmy, so it's not the theater, but the theater experience, like, doesn't exist the way we existed as kids. And I think people are just not as into the whole award scene that they used to be. I don't, like, let's say it doesn't go against the NFL. So what would the Emmys have done?
I think you're costing yourself between 3 and 5 million viewers at a minimum by doing that. I mean,
but isn't that still, you would know this better than me, or maybe John Lewis would know. Wouldn't that still be like 5, 6, 7 million viewers less than the Emmys used to get, or no, or am I off?
Oh, absolutely. It's never going to be what it was, but you, by sacrificing that many viewers, that huge chunk of a potential live audience.
Yeah.
Just you can easily avoid it by just not going up against an NFL playoff game.
But wouldn't the Emmys or whoever programmed that argument be, it's a totally different audience? So we're going to counter-program.
Apparently not. No, I disagree. I think you're losing casual viewers by doing that sort of
what
thing.
What about you, John? You got a thought on that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, look, ultimately the Emmys, it's going to be a tough sell in this era of splintered TV. You know, the only Emmys story I can ever think of in terms of individual actors was when Susan Lucci wasn't able to win any.
Was that the same Emmys, or was that the soap opera Emmys? I know, I guess it's probably the same
daytime,
thing, right?
But that's the only Emmys related story I can think of. I mean, it's not like, I mean, only at ESPN do people really care so deeply about the Emmys that they're willing to go and engage in very weird, you know, antics to try to ensure that people get them. I don't know how meaningful this is to Nathan Fielder or, you know, whoever else is in TV nowadays.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's probably, well, shout out to the great Katie Strang, the greatest reporter ever at The Athletic. John, I think human beings who work in creative fields in many ways are narcissists, and they absolutely want awards. You don't think those awards mean something to the actors and the directors?
Well, you know, that's fair.
My God,
that's fair. Well, I don't know. I mean, I just don't watch enough regular TV at this point to know who these actors and directors even are. Other than
it's just getting old, John.
Yeah, I'm watching reruns. That's what I'm doing.
Austin, have you won a sports Emmy at all?
I kept wondering why they were sending them to my office every year. It was really weird. But
what would
your
fake Emmy name be? Eric LARP or something like that?
Instead of Carp, they just wrote Fish.
Would it be Mosh Brulowitz or maybe something else? All right. Enough time. By the way, I said this was going to be a short podcast. Totally blew it. We're over 40 minutes. All right. John Lewis is, of course, the editor and founder of Sports Media Watch. Austin Carp is the Sports Business Journal managing editor / digital. I always appreciate their time. For all our tomfoolery here, the Peacock story is a big one. Pay attention to that heading forward. And obviously the NFL equity, potential stake, equity stake in the ESPN is a big one too. Those are stories we're going to come back to because they have significance far beyond this week. Austin and John, thank you so much. You'll definitely be back. And I appreciate your time as always. Thanks for coming on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Austin and John. Always fun. Didn't expect us to get into an Emmys topic, but there you go. If you like these podcasts, head to the archives. There should be some stuff you like. We just had Karen Brockin and Hillary Mandel of Endeavor. If you want to know how deals are cut behind the scenes, media deals, listen to that one. You'll like it. Had James Andrew Miller on. Pat McAfee, ESPN's director and producer of the College Football National Championships, Bill Bonnell and Jimmy Platt. Hubie Brown was on this podcast not too long ago. Laura Rutledge. Joe Buck, Ian Eagle. Again, there should be Ernie Johnson. There should be some names you appreciate and will be interested in. If you like this, again, leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That's how this podcast continues. Want to thank my producer, Patrick Antoine, for all his hard work. And thanks to Austin and John for coming on. Thank you to Odyssey for their support. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.